Welcome to the Strong Like Mum podcast.
Welcome to the Strong Like Mum podcast. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Jane Garnett, aka Banana Jane, licensed marriage and family therapist who also describes herself as a freedom lover and deep seeker, activating joy and liberation. Today, we're talking about relationships after parenthood, how our marriage might be impacted, and how to have a healthy sex life as parents. Hello, Jane.
Hello. So good to meet you properly.
Yeah, exactly. I followed you for a few years now. It's so
likewise. I don't even know how did we find each other? I can't even remember.
I actually don't know either. I came across your podcast somehow. I actually think it was when you did an episode with Adrienne Grenier.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I listened to that episode, which was fascinating. They're all fascinating, but that one was really interesting. It was really interesting actually to hear a man speak about the things that he spoke about, which was really, really refreshing. And then I went through your whole podcast, which, if anybody hasn't heard, Sex, Psychics and Psychedelics. Yeah, it's
all
so
the good
fascinating.
Stuff, you know?
It's really eye-opening. So my first question to you is, why Banana Jane?
Okay, well, banana is my spirit fruit, in short. Actually, as a kid, I was allowed to choose my middle name. My mom also was a freedom lover, and it just came to me. I was sitting bored in a math class, and I had this vision of a big, juicy banana. And I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know what to say, but it's had some kind of like, you know, it's been a motif throughout my life. It just keeps coming back to me. I tried to shed the name when I went through a serious phase of my life. And then, I think really, you know, later in life, it's kind of grown in significance for me because it's all the things that I kind of want to remember, which is, you know, I think, you know, there's a sexiness to a banana. It's kind of both male and female. You've got the kind of the phallic thing, and then when you open it up, it's like a, you know, a kind of vaginal. And then it's silly, you know, the history of bananas. I always think of, you know, slipping on banana skins and slapstick and ridiculousness, and I always want to remember that to sort of stay light, because I can get quite serious. And yeah, and it just, it tends to provoke some kind of curiosity or a smile in someone else.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely does. Okay. So yeah, so I know you've got, you know, years and years and years of experience doing what you do as a psychologist, but just for anybody who hasn't encountered you before, can you just briefly tell us what it is that you do?
Sure. I talk to people about where they're stuck, where they're struggling, and I bring to the table both my academic experience, but also the more kind of seemingly alternative explorations that I've been on. So I've studied somatic experiencing, which is a more kind of body-related way of doing therapy, EMDR, which is a kind of specific trauma motif. I've done a bunch of work with psychedelics, which is a lot of kind of deep diving. Mindfulness. I used to teach meditation. So I'm really kind of bringing a lot of things to the pot. But essentially, as you know, from working with people, it's about really just listening and being present.
Yeah. So you know, obviously, as I've said so many times, I have followed you for a while and I've listened to a lot of your podcast episodes, and you often talk about liberation and you use that word, and you come across, as someone who doesn't know you personally, you come across as someone who is really liberated. And for me, that really means you seem so free of insecurities. And I'm not sure if you really feel free of your insecurities or if you've just embraced them. And what does liberation mean to you?
Oh, gosh, such good questions. And so many of them. liberation to me is a path. You know, it's a bit like the banana symbol. It's kind of a reminder of the direction that I want to go in. Because I believe deeply that it's a blessing to be alive, and I want to experience that fully. Now, insecurities, yes, I absolutely have them. I don't believe any human who says that they don't have them. I think it's completely normal. But I both take them a little less seriously now than I used to, And at the same time, this might sound contradictory, but at the same time, I have a better relationship with them in the sense that I've learned about self-love. And that to me, self-love and liberation are very, very continuous, because if you stop, you know, angsting and being at odds with yourself, if you really learn to be your own ally, then the world is your oyster. It's all a big adventure. You don't have to sort yourself out or prove yourself.
Yep. So how, I mean, this is the question, I guess, how do you do that? I completely resonate with what you're saying, because I also feel like for me, it happened through motherhood that I really went on this journey of self-discovery, and I am completely just at peace with who I am and where I am. And that doesn't mean that I think I'm perfect or I don't have faults. I acknowledge my weaknesses. I know that I have them, but I feel so content in my own skin. And as you just said, that's such a powerful thing. But I know that it took me years to get there. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how I did. I sort of fumbled my way through that journey. For anybody who's listening who doesn't feel that and mm-hmm. really wants to get there, what are those things that we can start doing to start to truly have that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I couldn't be at this place of expansion that I'm currently in if I hadn't been in a contraction before. There is a kind of rebirth process to this, and you don't get to the good bit without going through the tunnel. So the tunnel is like the dark night of the soul, you know, that reckoning, looking at the parts of your life you're unhappy with. It usually comes more like midlife, you know, and I think it does often go with, you know, the other side of having had kids. You're sort of thrown into a different world and you have to kind of find yourself again within it.
So I'm assuming the first step is to not be afraid to feel uncomfortable. That's kind of what
Look, sometimes you just are uncomfortable, but I think if we can put a framework over this, which is this is a part of the creative process, it's always hard for us to reconcile with this, right? It's just like having writer's block, you know, when you're just like stuck in a place with yourself, you don't know what to do or where to go. Maybe you don't even know why you're feeling unhappy, right? If we can say that doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, actually, maybe there's something right with you. That's the beginning of the creative process. That's the beginning of wanting change. You know, that feeling of dissatisfaction, you know, wanting to put your spin in some way. So I would say, honor it. If you're experiencing it, honor it, you know, then you might have 12 people around you and they might be your parents or your husband or your kids going like, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And that's called gaslighting. You know, you've got to start trusting your own instinct and intuition. And one of the great things about being a mom is you're pushed further into that world. And when you start being able to use that for yourself, not just for your kids, then we're in really cool territory. And I think there's a lot of liberation there. So I would say trust, you know, and stay with it. Be curious.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So I want to take what we've talked about and move on slightly. Let's, you know, start going a little deeper into relationships. And I do want to talk about sex with you, because I think that it's not talked about enough. And for me, I'm all about sort of female health. And I think sex is a huge part of our health and well-being. But let's just start by talking about relationships. So my relationship certainly changed and continues to change throughout parenthood. And I think sometimes my biggest difficulty is sometimes switching from mum to wife or mum to partner or whatever that is. And I find it really difficult, just like I find it difficult if I'm in work mode to suddenly stop and run to the school gates and be like, wait, I'm sort of still writing that email, but now I've got to be mum. And I find that difficult. I find it difficult in my relationship. Is that something that you've come across before that people have experienced, and how, you know, how can people find that the right balance?
Yeah, I mean, I come across that constantly and I've experienced that myself. It's the norm. It's not the exception. So, yeah, I think we need to respect that we need transition time between these modes. Mm-hmm. It could be between mum mode and sexy mode, or it could be between mum mode and work mode. And work mode is great. It doesn't matter. it seems that the more powerful we get, the more hats we wear and the more, you know, versatile we need to learn to be. But we mustn't set ourselves up by thinking that we're robots, that we can just suddenly press a button and we can, and we're not men, you know? Yeah. So it's different for us. It's not like, I mean, I think there are some women who could just, you know, look at a piece of porn and suddenly be ready to go. But I think usually that's not the case. If you take especially those early days of motherhood where you've got, you know, you've got depleted energy.
Yeah.
And you've got a maxed out brain and you've got a strained relationship because everyone's got too much on their hands.
Right? Yeah.
And you feel such dry and you want to get your juice back. But sometimes someone wanting to have sex with you just feels like a whole other demand. Like, how do you deal with that? And I think, yeah, honoring that we need transition time. So I remember in my marriage, I worked out some formula. I was trying to remember it for you because I thought we'd talk about this. But I realized that the only way for me to kind of get into my sex mind was to relax. And the only way I could relax properly and sort of time efficiently would be doing these things. And it would be like, I need to carve out 2 hours in the sun and have one cocktail, you know? And it needs to be in the afternoon. It couldn't be in the, it had to be in the afternoon because every other moment just didn't feel right. So, you know, if I stuck to my little program, I could get myself into a place where I remembered what it felt like to want to have sex, which is like, you know, it's just such a different place in the mind. And have you read Emily Nagoski?
No, I have not.
So she's got that? My favorite book on sex, female sexuality, which is called Come As You Are. Mm-hmm. And she's a scientist and she's writing about how the science behind how female sexuality actually works. And she makes a lot of good points. And one of them is that female sexuality is very complex, and it's a complex, you imagine it like a switchboard, and you've got all the things that need to be turned on, like I was just talking about, right? The different parts of the brain, the relaxation, pleasure, right? I'm on holiday or whatever. And then you've got all the things that need to be turned off. So the turnoffs that need to be deactivated, right? So turn-ons, we've got a sense of that, right? But turn-offs could be like, you know, I'm tired, I'm annoyed at my partner, my body feels bad in this way, I'm not feeling attractive, I don't have any time, you know, blah, blah, blah. Somebody smells bad, you know, the kitchen is stressing me out. So to get into a state of being fully turned on. Oh, and you know, if we're going beyond like marriage and partnership or even inside it, do I feel safe? Huge. So we have to deactivate all of these turn offs and we have to activate the turn ons. So I think the headline is we need to respect the fact that we're complex creatures. It's just not one button.
So when you're saying turn them off, like with the kitchen, so I don't know why that stuck in my head.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I need a clean kitchen. So are you saying go and clean the kitchen, sort it out and make it done? Or are you saying...
No, I'm saying get the hell out of the kitchen. No, Shakira, you don't know me well enough.
Okay. So you're saying just find a way to block that, you know.
I mean, look, everyone's different, you know. Some people just have to have that fucking kitchen cleaned, right? And they're like, oh no, I can have reward myself with sex or something. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you have to come up with your own little, you know, cheats on the whole thing.
So for me, a massive thing with sex in that early postnatal, that first year postpartum, you know, it's different now. My twins are two. But at the time, something that was huge for me was breastfeeding, because it changed. Like, breasts were always a sex thing to me when I was younger, and you know, it was always, I always sort of related it to that. And then all of a sudden, it was a mum thing, and I would hold my baby, and my baby was sucking on my nipple, and they would. And then all of a sudden, I'd be like, "Oh wait, hang on, now your child." And it just felt it was like, you know, my brain wires just got confused, and I found it really difficult to separate it suddenly really changed that. And in that instance, if you have something that you just, you know, you mentioned feeling touched out or over, you know, that over demand as a mum where you've got kids hanging on you or demanding something from you, I mean, is that kind of the same advice you've just given? Just find, you know, allow yourself that transition time and find something, whether it is I go and I sit and have a glass of wine or.
Well, yeah, but also, like, you know, you don't need someone else sucking your tits if you're feeling maxed out in that. You move it to another erogenous zone. You know, you say to your partner, actually, I'd like to take that off the table for now, you know, do something else. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to respect your body and the changes that it's going through. And everything changes after you have kids. It's just a fucking fact. And I think trying to get back to what you thought sex was and was supposed to be is a mistake. I think it's all got to be reinvented. Mm-hmm. And the couples who succeed in this are open to that journey and taking a, you know, authentic and explorative journey together, and just, yeah, they're just open to change. But I think if you're just trying to repeat, you know, rinse and repeat, it's kind of a setup.
Yeah, for me, a huge thing that again will impact our sex life together will be the emotional connection. And again, there's been plenty of times, I think it's a bit, you know, like a roller coaster. I don't know if all other couples are like this, but, you know, we have moments where we're communicating really well and everything's great, and then we have moments where we just can't see eye to eye and we're not on the same page. And to me, you know, where we're sitting emotionally as a couple really impacts our sex life together. So my two questions to you are, one, how can couples try to invest in that emotional connection to make sure that they are on the same page? And secondly, if you're not, should we be separating sex and love, or sex and emotions, or are the two always going to be completely linked?
Are sex and emotions going to be completely linked? That's a tough question. I think they're linked. I don't know if they're always completely linked. And I think particularly in the female brain, everything's connected, right?
So
it's harder for us to compartmentalize. So I'm starting with your second question first. Look, I don't know if this is going to feel like a correct answer, but it's, I think it's one of the most important things. We've got to broaden our thinking out around sex. So it's not just, you know, having sex. It's how we feel about ourselves. It's about excitement. It's about creativity. So it's about coming alive. Now, we don't want to, again, set ourselves up by expecting to get that all from one person. So I think that the couples that are successful, they find excitement beyond the marriage. And I'm not talking about having sex with other people. Some people do that, but you know, things that really deeply turn you on. Like, I don't know, at a glance, I'm imagining, you know, what you're doing with your podcast and your Instagram and showing women how to be strong. Like, that's, that seems to be a realm of real aliveness.
Okay.
That's keeping you glowing. And I think that that's super important. So I think when it comes to mothers particularly, is to broaden out beyond the relational, which is just like, oh, I should be having more sex with my husband or whatever, right? Into, where is turn on for me right now in the picture? What brings me joy? What gets me excited? I mean, for me, I found my way back to sex in the early years of being a mum through dancing. And I had a little group. It was three of us who were really, really into it. We were all new mums. We'd all just had our second child. And we all felt like we were losing our identities. And we started doing these sexy dance routines. They were super fun and silly and burlesque. And it was like a combination of having a laugh with your friends, getting back in shape, and just feeling sexy and feeling alive and like dressing up. And, you know, it was so, so good for me. And it wasn't for someone else. And I think sometimes you need that. So I think, you know, my encouragement would be, add some selfishness to the picture. Like, think about the map of, you know, what turns you on in life, and make sure you're doing something beyond your relationship. Now, when it comes to the relationship, what you want to be doing is just find a way to connect, find a way to connect, find a way to connect. Always the same with your kids, right? That's my thing. Like, just keep connecting and you can't really go wrong. If you stop superimposing ideas about what it's all supposed to look like, you're probably going to go wrong. So you need to find a way to connect that is authentic.
Yeah.
You know, so that's some version of telling the truth.
Yeah.
About what you're really experiencing in a way that, you know, knowing your partner as you do, in a way that they can hear it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You talked about, you know, finding things that bring you joy or make you feel alive or that you find exciting being a really great first step, which I think is really interesting. If we are feeling down about our body image, my question to you is, how do you start to feel sexy again? You know, because you're not necessarily feeling sexy when, like, I don't think I was feeling my sexiest when I was 4 months postpartum and my cesarean scar was just healing and I had two twins here. You know, how do we start that? And I think that's a really great tip. Find something that just excites you and brings you to life. And then really interesting about your experience with the dancing there. That's really great. Yeah, finding something that that turns you on. And what about kind of self-exploration as a first step? Or is that, again, is that just a completely separate world of sex that doesn't necessarily impact sex?
Listen, I think it's all connected. But I think one thing I would say, you know, to all women on the planet, let's hope they're listening right now, is, you know, we've got to stop being so hard on ourselves. I'm so thrilled that there's this sort of sexual revolution going on in terms of information around female orgasm and, you know, the permission that comes with it. But there's a shadow side to it too, which is this sort of pressure to be uber sexual and to be multi-orgasmic and to be constantly masturbating. You know, I'm just like, there is no one way, you know, when we need to learn to, you know, love ourselves and meet ourselves where we're at. And if, you know, sometimes you just feel like shit and you just want someone to stroke your head. And, you know, let's hope you have good communication with your partner or someone who's willing to do it, or you stroke your own head. You know, it's not always sex. Sometimes it's comfort. You know what I mean? Just being with your body in a way that's gentle. You know, for me, I often just will just like lie down on a yoga mat, you know, just shavasana, just be on the ground. I mean, I think sometimes we need to just relax and release and be open and wait. You know, often if you think about it, the times it's easiest to feel turned on are when you have we're back to the, you know, my marriage ritual of the 2 hours in the sun. But it's trying to generate that feeling of, you know, of being open. You kind of just want to have a fantasy. If you're super, super busy all the time, you don't even have the bandwidth to have a fantasy.
But how do we find the space for that in motherhood or new motherhood? You know, that first year of motherhood, there is not that much time.
This may be controversial, but and I don't think it applies to everyone, but I would love it to be a socially acceptable thing to just take sex off the table for the first year. The plates of the earth, the plates of your vagina, the plates of your psyche are shifting so hard.
Yeah,
it takes time
for many relationships. If that's not an option, if people are like, no, I don't think I could not have sex for a year, but, you know, how do I find the time? Because my baby's waking me up every few hours. I guess maybe
okay, so
just...
Let's go gentler on it. I would say consider allowing yourself to take sex off the table. And maybe, you know, that could be take penetrative sex off the table. Right? Or having your tits sucked, if that's what you really don't want to happen, right? But, you know, permission, I think, is really important. The other thing I would say is question your assumptions around what has to happen. You know, people have these ideas in relationships that are very transactional. And I don't know, that just seems like such a killjoy situation to me. You still have to respect the stages of the process, you know?
Yeah,
which means you're going to have to build in time to relax, nurture yourself, and be brave enough to communicate that to the partner. Because I think there's still this sort of, we're still living with a massive martyr archetype around motherhood.
Right.
And I think, you know, our mothers were just, well, I mean, mothers throughout history have just killed themselves. You know, by taking on too much and just serving everyone else. And I think, you know, that's definitely changing, but it's, it hasn't changed. We're still in that process. We still have to be brave.
If you are physically not, you know, feeling apprehensive for whatever reason, whether you've had a tear or, you know, however your delivery's gone, is masturbation and self-exploration something you would recommend? Like, look, figure out what it is that you like, and then you can communicate that to your partner? Or should it be, look, let's the two of us sit down and...
No, I think it's a great idea if you can... I mean, it's not always translatable, right? Because masturbation is its own world, and then being with someone is its own world. And sometimes those two things overlap and sometimes they don't. But I would always encourage self-exploration. But again, more on the exploration than the masturbation. Like, it's like, if we can get to know ourselves in a sort of a multidimensional way, you know, how do I like to be touched? How do I like to not be touched? You know, just actually get in touch with what's actually real for you, not what you think you should be doing. Again, like, there's so much around, like, having those orgasms, getting those orgasms, checks in the boxes. No, you know, every, you know, as I don't know that much about Tantra, but I'm learning about it slowly over time. And it's so much about getting out of this results mindset and getting more into sensuality. So however you can be sensual with yourself, and it might be, I mean, for me, I take baths all the time, which is wasteful on the waterfront, but it's my bliss, my pleasure. And, you know, it's like, I just love a bath with Epsom salts in, you know, to me, that's just like, okay, return just to the body and sensuality. Or I don't think you have these so much in England, unfortunately, but, you know, here we have Korean spas, which are these all women's places where you can go and like steam and get in hot water and just be naked, you know, have some time to be naked. So for me and some of my female friends here, like, that's been when we had kids, young kids, if we could just like every so often make a break for it and get together with a female friends and just like do some of that sighing and releasing and having love and being like, oh my God, you know. And yeah, I think being able to get naked and be with your body without a kid hanging off it, without someone wanting to do something with it, you know, there's some kind of the reclaiming of the body, right? And being open to the body telling you what it wants, not you telling the body what it wants, what it should want.
Really interesting. So just a couple more questions before we wrap up. Like, when it just comes to the relationship now, so sex life, we've talked a lot about, but, you know, that the dynamic in the relationship will change when children come into the picture. If a couple is, I don't know, not falling apart, but if a couple is noticing like a breakdown in their relationship, what are the key things we need to do to try to maintain a relationship as parents? Is it have a regular date night? Is it share your emotions? You know, what are the things that we should be doing to try to maintain our relationship as parents?
Yeah, I mean, we have to find ways to connect however we can. Now, for some people, you know, it also depends on what your resources are, right? For some people, you can go away for the weekend and have a nanny, and other people, you can't do that. You might get to like put the kids in the other room and, you know, have a cup of tea together. So I don't think there's a one size fits all on that. And the same applies to therapy. Some people can afford that, some people can't. But the most important thing is to have touch points with your partner, and you can make your own rituals. I'm a big believer in rituals. So, you know, back to the tea, because we're British, we can talk about it, but you know, that you do nice things for each other every day. There can be small things, but, you know, it could be, you can build a little ritual around, you know, I bring you a cup of tea, you bring me a cup of tea. And then when we do this, we have a proper check-in. There's something called counsel that's used a lot in, it's a tool that's used a lot in couples therapy. And you can use anything as a talking stick, like a pencil, right? And the person holding the pencil talks from the heart about their experience, what they're going through, and you use I statements. So you go, you know, I'm feeling exhausted right now. I'm feeling like I want to connect with you right now. I'm just drawing from experience. Feeling like we should be fucking, but we're not. Feeling like I want to go on a holiday with my girlfriends, you know, whatever it is. So you just be honest, you know, and the job of the listener is to not interrupt, to listen as open-mindedly as possible, and then to reflect. So when I'm done, I give the pencil to my partner and they say, I hear that you're, you know, feeling exhausted and you want to go on a holiday with your girlfriends and you don't want to have sex, but you feel like you should. And they reflect it back until you're satisfied. You've got to be really careful. If you start slipping into an argument, you drop the tool, right? Mm. But you've got to, you know, this requires some discipline. And then you switch positions. And it's just a way to be honest and not get sucked into those old arguments. And usually, you know, in couples with the arguing, it's that thing called shoot and reload. Like people aren't, once you get activated, people aren't really listening to each other anyway.
Yeah.
It's more like the feeling of separation gets reinforced, and that's what we don't want.
And what about if the person you're with isn't emotionally available on the level you need them to be? You know, what if you're feeling all these emotions and your partner just isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question. That's such a reckoning, you know, it's a reckoning about, you know, what do you really need? Can you get those needs met in other places without destroying the relationship? One of the things I think is tough is on heterosexual couples is that, and particularly around the motherhood moment, is that we just grow so exponentially.
Mm.
And often they don't.
Mm.
Which is why a lot of marriages fall apart. Because we just grow and grow, and we, you know, we're surviving in all these underwater states and learning things about ourselves, and you know, and men often they're just not forced to
grow that
way. We've had our bodies rearranged. We have to, you know, we have to kind of keep going in this growth process. Otherwise, I think, you know, we just feel stuck and dead. So yeah, I mean, that's just a huge question. And I think you just have to try your best to overturn all the stones and also give yourself permission. You know, people change and things change.
Yeah, you just touched on a question that I had, which is, I found that I grew up a lot and changed as a person since motherhood, exactly what you just said. You know, I grew up just so much in the last 7 years. It got me wondering about whether people can change independently and grow, as you just said, you know, grow in different ways, but still have a really healthy, functioning relationship. And I guess, like, you know, the answer, I suppose, would be, look, some people can, some people can't. But what I think I'm hearing you say is that if you are noticing a disconnect on an emotional level, try to, when you said turn over all the stones, try to prioritize trying to get back to the same level, you know, do what you can to try to reconnect on that emotional level. Is that right?
Well,
or do you just accept that they're in a different place?
I mean, I think it's both, you know, acceptance is always a good thing, but at the same time, we are like growth machines. Mm. As women, we want to grow, we want to nurture, we want to see things improve.
Yeah.
Is this person blocking me growing, or is he just like not evolving as quickly as me?
Yeah.
Is he willing? Is there willingness? Can I take him on a little bit of this ride? What parts of this ride could we do together?
Mm.
You know, yeah. Psychics and psychedelics, remember, there are lots of tools out there.
Yeah. I think my final question would be, if you just had to say, you know, three things that you think, you know, you've just had a baby and you want to make sure that you are prioritizing, you know, alongside parenting, you are prioritizing your relationship and to keep on a healthy track. What are kind of the three easily accessible, simple things that we can all do? You know, is it something like have a date night? I really thought it was interesting what you said, you know, come up with a little ritual, like we have, you know, I bring you tea and we talk for 3 minutes or whatever it is. What are just three really simple things that we can do? Or is there a particular exercise that you might recommend to make sure that we can prioritize our relationship alongside parenting?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, cultivate some patience around the massive change that everyone's going through. Patience and compassion for that, right?
Yeah.
Don't be too hard on yourself about it. But yeah, I think a date night is an excellent idea. And again, maybe be a little open-minded about what that looks like. It doesn't have to be going out to a restaurant and staring exhausted into each other's eyes where you just go through the motions of, you know, ordering food. It's like, all I want to do is go to sleep. But, you know, it's like, be brave enough to talk about what you really want, you know, and maybe you take it in turns, you know, maybe 1 week it's like, really what I want is to have you rub my feet while I'm in bed, you know. And the next time is like, what I really want is just you to watch the football with me while I, you know, drink a beer. And I just want you to sit there. Or I don't know, you know, it doesn't matter, but just something that's real.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And, yeah, actually, there's a kind of a game or a tool called Lover Lover, where it's kind of related to what I just said, where one person asks the other to do something for, can be for 1 minute or 5 minutes. And it's an intimacy game. So it's, you know, I want you to massage my hand for 5 minutes, or I just want to like nuzzle you for, you know, for 5 minutes, or I want you to spend, you know, 1 minute telling me something nice about myself. Or so you express a need and they express a need, and you can decide what your increment of time is depending on your level of communication.
Yeah.
But it's a sweet game to play, and it takes that thing of like, we've got to have sex.
Yeah.
Pressure, you know, so I think anything you can do to relieve that pressure, because it doesn't help.
Yeah, absolutely. 1000%. Absolutely. Sorry, I said last question. That's not true, because I just remembered I had a couple of questions come in from people. But one that I thought was really, really, really interesting, and this has come up so in so many situations and conversations I've had with friends, this issue, and you touched on it before, I meant to ask you this thing about porn. And I have heard so many scenarios where porn has become a negative impact in a relationship, and for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe they still have a healthy sex life, or maybe they aren't having such a healthy sex life, but porn has become something that one person in the relationship seems to be drawn to and the other person isn't. What are your views on porn, and if porn is having a negative impact in a relationship, in a marriage, or any type of relationship, what, I mean, how does that,
I mean, we need another hour to talk about this, frankly, but it's such a big one.
Yeah.
Such a big one. It's reshaping brains all over the place, you know, because it's just such a fast, instant gratification, and something that's so hard to, you know, measure up to in, you know, real life sex. So
yeah.
I do think it's problematic. I mean, I'm all for freedom of expression and to, you know, for people getting turned on by whatever they want. And I think some porn is wonderful, but I'm not a great fan, because I think it isn't helping people in their relationships very much. But I don't think that telling people not to do things has ever helped. So back to connection, how do you connect around it? We don't want to be shaming people for watching porn or ourselves. If it's there in a relationship, is there a way to connect over it, to bridge the gap? You know, the idea, I think, often around problems with porn is to start bridging back from the porn into the kind of real world. So when you're working one-on-one with people, sometimes it's about saying to them, okay, just try adding some mindfulness to the thing. So say you're default watching images that have sound, try turning off one part of it. So you would turn off the sound. So you start using your own imagination, or you would turn off the image and just listen to the sound. So you start, because what happens is people just disappear into it, right?
Yeah.
And we don't want that so much, because then that's a setup, and then they go back to a partner and it's like, oh God, I have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all of those problems. So, because I think porn generates different things, disconnection, performance, anxiety, addiction, numbing, obviously. So, I think you want to work with it and build. It's like any addiction, you want to build bridges around it. You don't want to just be like, this is bad, cut out the behavior.
Yeah.
Don't believe that.
Yeah.
That answer?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, I have one other thought as well. So we were talking about the position of bridging. So we're taking the porn addicted person and saying, we want to kind of inch you back into some real world, bridge into the real world. The same applies on the other side. So say I'm in judgment around my partner's porn use, and I'm just like, porn is destructive, it's bad for our relationship, blah, blah. Let me look at my own judgment around this. Is there some porn out there for me that actually I could get into? Because really now there's post Me Too, there's a lot of different porn out there. You know, there's a lot of like, there's more female driven porn than before, you know, that is like really well shot, that has some scenarios.
Gentler.
You know? Nice porn, nice people porn.
Nice people porn.
So, you know, it's like, okay, can we go with some nice people porn and like inch our way in there, and you know, and actually it can be really fun too. So it's sort of like, can we undo the judgments on both sides?
Yeah, really interesting. Thank you so much. So where can people find you on either social media or online, and anything else that we
So my Instagram is @thebananajane. And that's sort of my social media hub. And then my podcast is called Sex, Psychics, and Psychedelics. I'm coming up on a second season of that. I'd love you to come on the show.
Thank you so much. Honestly, thank you so much. It's been so, so interesting. You are fantastic. You also have a really relaxing voice.
Good.
And it's nighttime here, so I feel very relaxed and ready to go to sleep. But after I've cleaned my kitchen.
Excellent.
I know. But thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and it's been amazing speaking to you.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me, and I hope you can tune in again soon to another episode of the Strong Like Mum podcast.
What about that?